Hello, and welcome to this special edition of Schismate. I'm David Mark Brown, and today I'm going to be reading the earliest known lost DMB file, Reefer Ranger. Reefer Ranger 1. Dark fell quickly and without contest during late winter in Matamoros. Striding across an alley ripe with urine and decay, Ranger J.T. McCutcheon leaned against an adobe wall. Once situated, he stilled his breathing and listened for the echoing voices of the three men he had tracked to this unmarked cantina. Soon he heard a familiar chorus buoyed into the night air by shots of cloudy mezcal. La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no puedo caminar, porque no tiene, porque la falta, marihuana pa fumar. It was a revolutionary verse, one he had heard before. Unclear about the reference to marijuana, he knew the song to be sung often by Pancho Villa supporters. The following verse could indicate something important about the men he sought. He listened in. It was nonsense, a farce, something about unrequited love being as ridiculous as a bald man with a comb. No matter. He hadn't suspected these men were Villaistas anyhow, nor the rivaling Huertistas. The actions of Villa and Huerta only mattered to him when they spilled across the border, which after 3 years of revolution was happening more often. These were most likely simple bandits, cattle rustlers, but he hadn't followed them across the border for a good night kiss. He sniffed the air, the end of his nose curling. As his eyes adjusted to the scant light, he spotted a crate of rotting cabbages across the way. Covering his nose with the crook of his elbow, he breathed deeply. It seemed unlikely he had taken the men into custody without bloodshed. For a second, he regretted not jumping them before they reached town. Realizing the singing had stopped, he instinctively reached for one of his Colt 45 flat tops. The crunch of a boot on gravel sparked the silence. He spun to confront it, but for the first time during his 10 years of service with the Texas Rangers, he was too slow. The business end of a shovel struck his brow, his skull compacting with the force of the blow. Popping lights blinded him. Spasming, he dropped his 45. Strange. But he thought first about the condition of his hat, rather than his head. He listed and would have fallen, but another attacker shoved him hard against the adobe wall. He smacked the back of his head against the mud brick, bracing himself and wondering where his hat had gone. His vision rolled left and right as if he pitched on a boat. Un wrench solitario, usted debe haber pernicio el jugar el diablo tejano. McCutcheon steeled himself against the coming onslaught. Bloodshed was a certainty now, most likely his own. Wherever I'm standing is my home, you dirty Mexican bastard. With that, a fist shot out of the shadows, connecting with his jaw. Briefly, he thanked God for the support of the adobe wall. Stay on your feet, he thought. Reaching beneath his duster with his left, he drew his second Colt flat top, now or never. Before he could focus and aim, the shovel swept back into view. As the shovel smashed into his hand, he forced off a round early. Then he forgot about God altogether. Dame del tiro hebrero, yo! A din of angry voices rattled in his head like bees in a tin can before a fury of blows broke against him. Desperately, he tried to whistle, to call, anything, but his jaw had swollen shut. He covered his face the best he could. Finally, someone pulled him from the wall and threw him to the ground, where a boot to his temple ended the nightmare. 2. Two gunshots brought a sudden end to the violence.
La prisa, el villista, está viendo. De nuevo a la hacienda, viva Huerta! Viva Huerta!
Men scurried down the darkened alley, echoing the refrain, Viva Huerta! But the man who gave the orders paused at McCutcheon's body, limp and lifeless. He holstered his gun before stooping to pick up a single Colt 45, the second smothered by the ranger's body.
Rapidamente!
He followed the others, leaving a stillness behind. Filthy water trickled down the center of the alley, mixing with McCutcheon's blood. A black cat pounced from a stack of crates, chasing cockroaches past where he lay face down in the dirt. An hour later, a slumped old lady exited the cantina, carrying a tablecloth full of rags slung over her shoulder like a sack. So diminutive was her stature, the bundle settled behind her knees. When she turned, there in her path lay the wrench.
"Ay, Dios mío,"
the lady whispered as she bent to check for a pulse. Her wrinkled face, round eyes peering from deep-furrowed caves, was dark and ruddy like blood and chocolate. She straightened. Muttering to herself, her sack still over her shoulder, she scuttled away. 30 minutes later, she returned with 2 goats dragging a litter. Grunting, she rolled his upper body into the makeshift basket of rope and clicked her tongue. The goats obediently tugged the limp body of the ranger, cowboy hat now resting on his chest, into her house on the edge of town. Without slowing, they pushed through the heavy fabric hanging over her doorway. Glancing over her shoulder, the old woman followed the men. Amidst the stillness, a chill settled into the trough of night beneath winking stars. Moments later, the goats reemerged to scavenge for scraps of garbage. Slits of greasy light poured into the street from around the curtained door. Inside, the bent lady wrung a rag into a basin of water. Humming to herself, she dabbed crusted dirt and blood from the ranger's face. Unconscious, he rested upright in the basket of the litter. In the flickering light of an oil lamp, the woman crossed herself in the Catholic manner while growing more rhythmic in her tune. She lifted McCutcheon's eyelids. His eyes had rolled back into his head. She bent close to his face to block the wavering light. His eyes and the corner of his mouth twitched. She pulled down on his chin to open his airway and listened intently as his breath came in raspy, labored draws, punctuated with irregular shudders. Finally, she massaged his face and neck before feeling again for his pulse. Instead of beating slow as it should, it increased in tempo, his muscles tensing. Nimbly, she jumped onto the bed and rummaged on a high shelf tucked under the thatched roof. On finding a small bowl of crushed leaves, she returned to McCutcheon's side. Transferring flame from the lamp to the leaves, she breathed it briefly to life before allowing the fire to turn to smoke. She placed the ranger's hat on his forehead and draped a wet rag over its brim to cover his entire face and chest. She sat close to him, holding the bowl, allowing the smoke to rise alongside his neck, up into the tent she had created. The ranger snorted and coughed. As she kept the smoke rising steadily with her breath, his quaking muscles relaxed.
Ah, marijuana sagrada.
Sacred marijuana. Three. McCutcheon groaned. He felt he had awoken in the back of a dark, pulsing cave. He wrestled with his senses until he heard a soft chittering like quail hiding in brush. The sounds were incoherent. He focused on smells, quickly wishing he hadn't. Manure and smoke, the only 2 odors he could distinguish. What the hell? He tried to open his eyes. At first they refused, as if sewn together. Gradually, a thick crust cracked and broke. For several blinks, he saw nothing but a flickering blur. Finally, the scales fell away, and he recognized his surroundings as the inside of a chink house. Plaster had fallen in several areas, revealing the wooden structure packed with gravel and mud. It wasn't a jackal or adobe, common housing for poor Tejanos and Mexicans. It was the traditional housing for Indians. The realization seized him with panic. He jerked, reaching for his Colts, but they were gone. Pieces of memory returned in random order. He remembered hearing the chorus of La Cucaracha, discovering the trail of 2 horse thieves at the edge of a thicket, and finally the dark shape of a shovel cracking him in the skull. He remembered the scrape, but had no way of knowing a full 24 hours had passed. The chittering sounds returned. Lurching, he realized his arms were tangled or tied down. He swore, his eye and mouth twitching, his headache throbbed with his increasing pulse.
Usted no debe maldecir tanto. Cursing no good por tu health.
He flinched as an old woman, bearing no signs of fear or menace on her ancient face, pushed through a curtain that served as a front door. He flashed his eyes around the room. Nothing jumped out at him. Nothing seemed to indicate any sort of danger. His arms had only been laced through the ropes of a rudimentary litter, which upon closer inspection appeared to be the source of the manure smell infusing him. "Pardon my French," he said as he freed himself and sat up.
"Francois?"
The woman looked puzzled. "No, no, never you mind. English will be fine. Now, if you don't mind me asking, where the hell am I and what happened?"
"En mi casa, los bandidos la dejaron para los muertos. Pero Dios sonrió en usted, en tierra?"
The old woman paused to let him catch up. "Bandits, yeah, I understand." He slowly looked himself over. Everything appeared to be intact. He was cut, bruised, and bloodied, but not so bad off, considering. His left hand had swollen stiff. Most of his face, an ill-fitting mask. Two thoughts occurred to him. "My hat, my guns." She nodded her head, but stood there silently. He tried again. "Mi pistolas, sombrero." "Sí," she pointed with her lips to his right side. He looked down. His hat, his grandfather's Stetson, rested beside him. Crushed in the front and dirty, it was no worse off than him. He popped his neck, reached down, and took the hat to straighten it. A cockroach scurried from beneath the brim. "Mi pistolas?" The woman smiled and nodded in the affirmative. Before he could try again, he caught a whiff of something strange coming from his hat. "What's that smell?"
"Marijuana."
He narrowed his eyes at the old woman and waited for her to continue. Four.
"Marijuana para sus asmientos, su asma. La ayudo a curar. Marijuana, good medicine."
McCutcheon bolted upright, pain shooting along his spine. "You pumped me full of loco weed to make me better?"
"Sí."
"You crazy old hag! What the hell did you do that for?" He could hear his grandfather's words echoing in his brain, lecturing him about the limitations of men who depend on stimulants and alcohol for courage. He had taken a vow when he first became a ranger that nothing stronger than a good glass of wine would violate the sanctity of his body. Temperance seeming more reasonable than prohibition, considering his Scotch-Irish Presbyterian upbringing. His father may have been a spineless religious nut, but he made a dang good wine. As he tore into the woman again, the muscles in his face jerked and twitched worse than before. "Not now." He pressed his fingers to his face, breathing deep. Nervous tics had affected him since youth and were intensified by stress. While studying the latest criminal justice methods in Austin, he had developed successful means to discipline and control his body. He lost them among his alien surroundings. He tried to stand. "Look, woman, I need my damn guns, and I'll get out of your hair." The woman clucked softly and shook her head, positioning herself to support him. Struggling to fend the old woman off and stand without her help, McCutcheon flopped backward into the litter. Suddenly she shushed him with a slashing gesture across her throat. He didn't argue. He heard it too. Stilling himself, he struggled to slow his heart rate and control the spasms in his face and throat. Swallowing came hard while a humming rose in his ears. "Relax, damn it." But it was no use. The old woman reached under the mattress to pull out a slick Winchester rifle, lever action. She eased a bullet into the chamber. "What the?" She held a single finger to her lips. He heard it again. The sound of boots scuffling in the dark outside the chink house. He gestured for the woman's attention, mouthing the same question from before.
"Pistolas."
But she stared intently at the heavy curtain hanging in her doorway as a shallow bleat from a goat ended in gurgling.
"Santa Maria, Madre de Dios."
She kissed an amulet hanging from her neck and steadied the rifle. It would have been comedic if his life hadn't depended on this shriveled old woman leveling a rifle longer than she was tall. Still trying to regulate his breathing, McCutcheon scanned the room for his pistols. He heard more movement outside. The edge of the curtain bulged inward. "This is crazy," he thought. I'm being hunted by bandits in Mexico with only a raisin and some goats to protect me. The only thing he could find within reach to fight with was a kettle. Cast iron it would have to do. The curtain moved again. A goat poked his head through the opening and bleated, blood dripping from its muzzle. A roar and flash ripped the stillness in two as the old woman pulled the trigger on the 30-30, working the lever action to reload. 5.
Diablo el infierno!
The shack danced with the impact of hot lead. McCutcheon slammed onto the earthen floor, abandoning the idea of the kettle. Plaster ripped off the walls and shattered in clouds of rock and dust in the air above him.
Son of a bitch!
The old woman still stood in the middle of the room.
Dios en cielo trae su fuego para quemar huerta y a sus diablos!
She shoved the barrel of the rifle into a hole in the wall and worked a lever, burning the night air with gunpowder and lead. McCutcheon dragged himself through an increasing pile of rubble, searching for his Colts while his throat continued to tighten. His right eye twitched so rapidly he could barely use it. Smoke filled the upper half of the room, the thatched roof on fire. In another few minutes, the fight would be over one way or the other. The woman stomped next to his right hand, and he looked up.
Pistola!
She pulled out one of his Colt 45s from under her skirts and handed it to him. I'll be a son of a... He spun the cylinder. It was fully loaded. Outside, the gunfire lulled as the bandits waited for the flames to do their work. With nimble fingers, the old woman reloaded the Winchester. She pulled a 10 out from under rubble on her bed and threw it to McCutcheon.
You take. Good medicine.
He ignored her. Twitching, he leveled his Colt toward the door where the torn curtain dangled in the opening, but it was little use. He couldn't steady his aim. His face and neck yanked to the left. He'd be able to kill a man at 10 feet, maybe. At least it was night, but the fire would make it easy for the bandits to see him and the old woman when they stepped from the burning house. The woman bent down and took the 10. She shoved it into McCutcheon's chest. Okay, okay. He tucked the 10 into an inner pocket of his duster. Without waiting longer, he surged through the curtain and into the night air before McCutcheon could respond. Gunfire blazed from all around. McCutcheon lurched toward the opening. Chapped, he was following an old woman's lead, but a bullet struck the doorpost. As shards of wood and rock knocked him off balance, he hit the jam hard. Quaking, the remains of the burning roof collapsed inward. In a shower of sparks, a roof support struck him on the shoulder and drove him to the ground. The smoldering support pinned his left hand, cooking the flesh. Smoke burned his lungs. Rolling onto his back, he heaved the beam off. Above, he saw a night sky where the roof had been. Unbelievably, gunshots continued as the old woman called down fire from heaven while the Winchester delivered it. He pulled himself into the chill night air on his belly, bear crawling away from the illumination of the flames. A hot slug struck him in the thigh like a hornet. He gritted his teeth and rolled onto his back. A flash, followed quickly by a pop, originated from the brush beyond the clearing the goats had grazed. Dirt kicked up next to the ranger's boot. He steadied his aim toward the source of the flash and let his Colt roar. After tearing off 3 quick shots, he continued toward the shadow of a cement trough. He threw his back against the cold cement, gasping for breath. His head spun. Lights danced and popped in his vision as the night suddenly fell quiet. The gunfire ceased. But he couldn't stop the spasms. Finally, overwhelmed by pain and unable to breathe, he passed out. Six. McCutcheon awoke to several sensations at once. Scattered drops of rain chilled his exposed skin and hissed among the burning embers of rubble. Numbness altered with electricity throughout his extremities. An orange sun brushed the belly of the clouds on the horizon. Finally, a snuffling beside his head jerked him totally awake. A goat, one of the twins belonging to the old woman, nuzzled at the crusted blood in his hair. Snorting along his shoulder, the animal tugged his duster open and sniffed the tin in his pocket. All right, that's enough. Shoot. Lying flat on his back, McCutcheon tried to wave the animal off, but even the slightest movement was difficult. He found his hat lying next to his head, brimmed down and relatively dry. Well, that's a stroke of luck. He propped himself up and discovered his Colt digging into his back. Hello, pretty. He checked the cylinder. 3 bullets. No sooner than the blood returned to its normal circuits, his nervous tics began. He could breathe, but his right eye flickered as his neck jerked his whole head to the left worse than as a child. A crackling sensation returned in his shoulder and hand, like his frame had been shoved into skin 3 sizes too small. He had forgotten about the burn. Picking at the charred edges of his duster, he glimpsed the white pus forming in and around the wound. His left hand had swollen and cracked, 1st-degree burns covering the back of it. The flesh trapped under his ring blistered and continued to cook. He tried to spin it, but it stuck fast, his meaty hand much too swollen. He shook his head. Elizabeth, why can't I let you go? Finally, he remembered the gunshot to his thigh. Cringing, he checked behind the torn flap of bloodied denim. Hot damn, I'll live yet. It had merely scratched him, taking nothing more than a bite of flesh. Coming full circle, he remembered what had brought him to Mexico in the first place. Grinding his teeth, the poison of the night's events flowed through his veins, strengthening him with hatred. The goat lapped water from the trough, and the need of drink gave McCutcheon immediate purpose. Mind if I join you? Sweeping flotsam aside, he cupped his hands. After several scoops, he steeled himself against the pain and rose to his full 6'3" height. He had some killing to attend to, but first. He scanned the senseless carnage around him. A warm slice of sun burned the gap between cloud and horizon, blinding him as he peered toward the remains of the old woman's house. He shaded his eyes and moved closer. Remnants of a pool of blood and drag marks in the dirt indicated where the old croon's first shot had struck home, most likely a kill. He refused to think about the woman herself. There could have only been one outcome for her, and thinking about it made his eyes spasm. He skirted the edge of the rubble into the clearing between the woman's house and the wilderness beyond. The first grisly sight he encountered was the companion goat, throat slit from ear to ear, his side half charred. Pattering raindrops dappled the thick dust, disguising the blood trails, but he found one that started in the center of the clearing and worked its way toward the brush. 7. He didn't want to finish analyzing the scene, but he had no choice. He owed the old lady that much and more. Drawing his Colt, he left the blood trail and swung wide to search the edge of the brush. He recognized the prickly pear he had loosed 3 rounds into the night before. At least one of the slugs had not been wasted. Blood spatter covered several pads. The trail led south toward a cluster of large mesquites, probably where the horses had been tied up. He would check that later. Moving more quickly, he steeled himself for the inevitable. Good God! In an opening surrounded by acacia shrubs, McCutcheon found the remains of the old woman's body. She hadn't just been killed. She had been desecrated. He swallowed and took a deep breath before bending over the grisly scene. The woman had been shot several times, by the looks of it, more than a few of them before she fell, and some after. In anger, one of the bandits had carved her with a knife. He coughed, finding it harder to breathe. About to stand, he noticed something clenched in the woman's hand. Prying back her fingers revealed the amulet she had kissed the night before. Too much unfinished business, he thought, as he rubbed the amulet between his thumb and finger. It looked Aztec. He recognized the grotesque face of the sun god at the center. On wobbly legs, he stood while slipping the amulet inside his duster next to the tin. He reached the smoldering chink house and the blood-stained dirt at its entrance before his curiosity got the better of him. After confirming all tracks led toward the stand of mesquites, he opened the rusty tin. Crazy old biddy. The tin contained a dozen tightly rolled marijuana cigarettes. He clenched the busted and swollen fingers of his left hand, listening to the voices of his grandfather and the old woman in competition. but his grandfather, a ranger to the end, had gone to rest a long time ago. This woman's body was barely cold, and she had died in part because of him. Good medicine. It was the least he could do for a woman whose name he would never know. He pulled out a single cigarette. Stooping over the burning coals of a roof beam, he puffed it to life and took a slow drag. He coughed at first, hacking up a loogie, and then settled into the familiar routine of inspecting the scene. By the time he reached the mesquites, where the horses had been tied, his breathing came easier. There had been five of them, one dead, one wounded. Out of the three remaining, one was heavy, while the other two were slight. They rode away toward the south. The woman had mentioned Huerta. If these were Huertistas operating this far north, they needed protection against the roving Villaistas, the infamous peon cavalry of Pancho Villa. Only one place for 20 miles could provide that sort of protection. First, he had to fetch his horse. The remaining goat followed the ranger halfway to the cantina before turning around. He felt affection for the little critter, the loner. But a half-chewed-up gringo ranch wandering Matamoros by himself was conspicuous enough without a goat trailing him. On the other hand, there was no point in being furtive now. No longer quietly tracking prey, his next move would be offensive. Soon enough, his enemies would know exactly where he was. By the time he reached the northern edge of town, his gait had quickened and his tick had completely gone. Now, I'll be damned. He patted the tin in his duster. After reaching the riverbank of the Rio Grande, he pursed his lips and pierced the morning air with a sharp two-tone whistle. He bent the pitch upward and added a trill at the end. Repeating it twice, he crouched behind a yucca. It didn't pay to be a visible target anywhere along the river these days, on either bank. In less than a minute, he heard a familiar whinny as his horse, Chester the Fourth, trotted up from the river bottom. 8. Sleek and happy, Chester snorted. Not in the least perturbed, it had been 36 hours since McCutcheon left him by the river. He mulled green grass around the bit in his mouth. No, I'm fine, you. McCutcheon gritted his teeth as he swung himself into the saddle. In no hurry, and not particularly desirous of agitating his wounds further, he led Chester at a comfortable walk around the western edge of town. Having been spotted heading north toward the river, he carefully remained out of view. He wanted watching eyes to assume he had returned to Texas soil. Good riddance. But he wasn't going home yet. He had work to do. The two-story stone hacienda jutted from the horizon, visible from miles away. Dismounting on the backside of a knob, he indicated for Chester to stay close. With his Colt reloaded, he carried jerky, dried apricots, and a canteen to the top of the rise. After making himself comfortable, he watched the comings and goings while devising his night raid. The property for miles around belonged to Hacienda Nuevo Santander. As well, the hacienda operated over 70 acres of farmland and a mill. It wasn't cotton, but McCutcheon couldn't tell from his perch what the mill processed. A cluster of low adobe houses crouched at the near corner of the fields. That would be the first place he'd be spotted, if he wasn't careful. On a slight rise to the east perched the hacienda proper. The lesser brick buildings surrounding the original stone mansion included a store, cantina, blacksmith, kitchen, and whatever else the haciendado deemed necessary to live according to proper standards. A damn waste. Extravagance leading to laziness and weakness, as far as McCutcheon was concerned. Many of the Mexicans felt the same way. Disassembling or crushing most of the haciendas at the beginning of the revolution. The fact this one still prospered fit with the notion that Huerta had taken a liking to it personally, but that was none of his business. His concern was that vaqueros from this hacienda had rustled cattle from Texas ranches, including the Corona, and had recently tried to kill him, twice. Stealing cattle and threatening the life of a ranger were both killing offenses. That meant the law stated he could kill them twice.
and he intended to. Justice was coming, but it would have to wait until nightfall. Only one thing troubled him. He had never gotten a good look at the men, neither at the cantina nor at the old woman's. Gambling, an affliction of the pathetic, was beneath him. All the same, McCutcheon reckoned it a safe bet that the bastard who carved the woman had the Winchester. That was something, and with any luck, he'd reclaim his lost colt, too. His .45 would no doubt be gripped by the man who organized the ambush at the cantina. He had put down whichever hijo de puta he found with his pistola, and be doing the world some good. His plan more or less in place, he turned to his relaxation regimen to pass the time. Maybe later he'd take a nap before heading down for reconnaissance at dusk. He grunted as he crossed his legs and placed his feet on his thighs, careful to avoid the gunshot wound. Opening his palms upward, he cleared his mind. 9. McCutcheon observed several sentinels setting up watch around the periphery of the hacienda, including one dang near the knob where he had spent the heat of the day. When darkness fell, he slipped easily through the first line of defense. Guessing they would switch the watch around midnight, and anxious to get the job done sooner rather than later, he moved quickly. He couldn't have hoped for a better situation. Some of the hacendado's men started a large bonfire to fend off the damp chill blowing inland from the Gulf of Mexico. McCutcheon knew their line of sight would be diminished by the flames. The peons remained the only wild card. He and Chester steered clear of the fire and the buildings, choosing the spot safest from stray eyes. For several minutes McCutcheon sat quietly in the saddle, observing the scene. 6 to 8 men sat on benches around the edge of the fire, whooping and hollering, while peons milled nervously across from them. McCutcheon shook his head. For amusement, the vaqueros had chosen to humiliate peons by making them dance. The breeze shifted, carrying their voices toward him.
"This is some good stuff, yes? Why don't you have some? Oh, that's right, I forgot. You're too busy dancing!"
The vaqueros cackled with laughter, firing off rounds in the air and at the peons' feet. The raucous startled the horses tied up opposite McCutcheon's position. "Dumb bastards." Villa could ride in with an army, and they'd never hear it. Finally, they quieted down as the leader picked up where he'd left off.
"Besides, you're too poor and ugly to smoke the general's personal marijuana."
A vaquero choked and blew smoke, the others laughing at him. Finally, the pieces started to fit. The crop McCutcheon had seen during the day was canemo, marijuana. Even if Huerta smoked incessantly, the only reason to grow this much, this far north, was to trade along the border to obtain information, weapons, and favors. Whatever benefit McCutcheon experienced from the plant, these men were obviously too boorish and undisciplined to enjoy. It spurred an evil inside them. Intoxicated and cruel, the jackals turned violent on the huddle of peons. A burst of gunfire scattered the workers toward the adobes. The image of the eviscerated old woman flashed in his mind. Marijuana had been responsible. McCutcheon thought a couple of vaqueros had broken out in a scuffle until realizing the one who seemed to be el jefe had snuggled up with a peon woman. She tried to defend herself, and he turned rough. Slapping her, she fell back, almost tumbling into the fire. A cry came from one of the adobes, so they were watching.